and a warm welcome to another broadcast of A Fireside Chat. I am your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Richard Salva, who wrote the book Soul Journey from Lincoln to Lindbergh. Richard is a minister and 30-year expert on past lives. He lectures widely on yoga, philosophy, reincarnation, and history. His book has received 5 stars from Forward Clarion Reviews. In his book, he presents compelling evidence that Abraham Lincoln also incarnated as Charles Lindbergh. So let's find out more about this interesting topic from Richard right now. How are you, Richard?
I'm doing well, Lance. How are you?
Oh, good, good, good. Where did you get the idea to write a book, the book Soul Journey from Lincoln to Lindbergh?
Yes, I actually first read about this, this thought that actually was something that Paramahansa Yogananda had said. Yogananda is a great master of yoga.
Uh-huh.
He's fairly well known because he wrote the autobiography of a yogi.
Oh, yes.
And also his photograph, many people have seen his photograph because it was on the cover of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper album. The Beatles and Elvis Presley and millions of people throughout the world have been inspired by his writings and teachings.
Oh, yeah.
But in the 1970s, his direct disciple, Swami Kriyananda, wrote a book called The Path. And in that book, in a chapter titled Reincarnation, Kriyananda mentioned that Yogananda had said, about 60 years ago or so, that Abraham Lincoln, in a past life, had been an advanced Himalayan yogi, and that he was reborn as Charles Lindbergh. And about 10 years ago, the idea came to me that it would be interesting to investigate this statement. It seemed like something that would be fascinating to look into. I didn't know what all I would find, but I thought it would be interesting to look into it.
Huh.
And so I dove into the history. I dove into the biographies, the history books, and so on. There's so much written about both men. They were so famous.
Yeah.
Their lives are so deeply chronicled and scrutinized. And many people who knew them wrote about them, about Abraham Lincoln especially. Not only was he president during the Civil War, but his life ended so dramatically and quickly. And at that point, everybody wanted to know about him. So many people who knew Lincoln wrote about him, wrote about what he was like, what his habits were, what he tended to do in certain situations. And similarly for Charles Lindbergh, after he made his flight over the Atlantic in 1927, many people, again, there were a number of people who knew him, wrote about him, and he also wrote about himself. So there was a great deal of material, a great deal of written material to go through.
Mm.
So I spent 8 years going into this, and I'll tell you, I was just amazed at what I discovered. I ended up uncovering nearly 500 fascinating similarities and correlations between the lives of Lincoln and Lindbergh, more than 200 connections between Abraham Lincoln and the ancient spiritual science of yoga,
huh,
and more than 100 between Charles Lindbergh and the path of yoga. And these connections, too, they weren't the sort of connections that everybody has, for instance, as if they both were, you know, like pizza and like Beatles music or something like
right,
that. But mental obsessions, physical habits, social habits, even spiritual traits that they shared in common.
Huh.
It was really quite amazing.
Wow. Did anything unusual happen while you were researching this book?
Yes, actually, that's a part of the amazing aspect of working on this particular project was a strong sense of guidance from the very beginning. In fact, the way that I got the idea for this book, I was flying in an airplane cross country, and I was in between writing projects. And as a minister and a yogi, I'm a spiritual person, so
mm-hmm,
I prayed for guidance. I opened myself up to God, to the universe, to give me an inspiration of something to work on. And within less than a minute's time, the idea for this book came to me. And it was a very strong impression, too. It wasn't a sort of a vague notion at all. And as soon as I started working on it, I just felt like I was riding a wave, like I was a surfer out of
Malibu.
You know, because there was just so much so many, I was not only finding so much in the books, but I was receiving so many ideas and inspirations that I couldn't keep up with it all. And in fact, I'm afraid a number of those ideas and inspirations got lost because I just didn't have something to write on or didn't have a little microcassette recorder on
wow.
me at the time. But it was just very powerful. And just to give you an idea of some of the amazing experiences I had while working on this subject, on this book, I would be reading about Abraham Lincoln and something to do with his life. And after reading it, I would be wondering, you know, thinking, I wonder if there's something here that has to do also with the life of Charles Lindbergh.
Mm-hmm.
So the next day, I would be in a bookstore or a library, and I would see a book on the shelf. And the book might not have even had to do directly with Lincoln or Lindbergh. But I would pick it off the shelf and open it, and right there on the page I would open it to, I would find the answer to my question.
Wow.
Now, this didn't only happen once. It had happened over and over again. And as I say, there was just a very powerful sense of guidance while working on the book.
Wow. Sounds like a lot of synchronicities to bring this book about.
Yes, yes, absolutely. It was quite extraordinary.
Well, you know, some people say, most people who have written books, I've done some guests, some shows with guests who say that, you know, we have pre-incarnational contracts to do certain things, and this definitely sounds like something you might have designed as part of your journey in this lifetime.
Yes, I can imagine that very much having been the case. With such a quick answer to the prayer and so direct, it really seems like it was something that was good for me to work on in this life.
Absolutely, and you know, the idea that of reincarnation is something that it's still somewhat controversial, you know, especially in religious circles.
Yes.
But I think people are beginning to see the wisdom of the possibility that we, you know, that we do go on in various ways, and that our spirit is eternal.
Yes.
And
yes. Yes, in fact, you know, I was actually surprised to discover that 40% of Americans either believe in reincarnation or consider the possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And something else that I thought was equally interesting was the fact that in a particular Gallup poll that was done recently, they discovered that the same percentage of Christians believed in reincarnation,
oh.
people who said that they were Christians believed in reincarnation,
wow.
as just the general populace, as
wow.
those who specifically said they believed in it. And just goes to show you that I think that there are as many forms of Christianity as there are Christians.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, plus it's funny, you know, how some of the, in India, how some of those monks find the revered ones that have reincarnated. And
yes.
they'll travel around to these little villages, and they'll pick out a kid and say, that's the monk, you know, he's going to be our next spiritual leader. So
yes, and then he'll the little boy would remember things that the monk had owned, and so.
Yes, yes. Well, the Dalai Lama is an example of that.
Yes,
so,
yes.
So you see,
there is some actual spiritual organizations that are really just founded very powerfully. I mean, it's one of the foundation stones of their religion is reincarnation, and not just in a vague way, but in a very concrete way.
Huh. Interesting. Well, it certainly makes a lot of sense. Now, when you were doing the research, did you visit some of the places that Lincoln and Lindbergh made famous?
Yes, yes. In fact, one day I flew to the Midwest, and I drove into Springfield, Illinois, which was Abraham Lincoln's hometown. And the reason why I did that was before I made that trip, I was realizing that I was discovering all these connections, and it really seemed to offer evidence that what Yogananda had said was true.
Uh-huh.
But I also wanted to feel it, and I should give a little background on this.
Yeah,
For the last 32 years, I've been following the path of yoga and meditation,
uh-huh.
path of self-realization as taught by Paramahansa Yogananda.
Uh-huh.
And while learning to meditate, I've become spiritually sensitive over these years of meditation on
oh.
a daily basis. And so what I've really enjoyed doing is going to places that were like sacred sites, places like Assisi or Glastonbury, and meditating there, and just feeling the inspiring vibrations there, and going deeper in meditation because of them. And every place that I went to was inspiring like that, but each one place is also different. And over the years, I've begun to think of myself as a bit of a spiritual connoisseur of vibrations. And so I thought, well, let me go to where Lincoln had lived.
Uh-huh.
And so I drove into Springfield. Now, I did a red-eye flight, so I actually came in literally with red eyes. I was half asleep. I just made it into the town, still feeling like I was half asleep. And I started going on, you know, because of my schedule, I had to go right then. I couldn't sleep then. I had to go visit some of these places. But the energy in some of them was so powerful that it just cut through my drowsiness.
Wow.
Especially, I want to say, if any of your listeners are spiritually sensitive and have a chance to go to Springfield, especially I would recommend going to the Lincoln Herndon Law Office, where Lincoln was in charge of that law office. And really, the ideas, his political ideas and so on, his inspirations that helped to really change America during his lifetime, a lot of it came through there. And there's a very powerful sense of light flowing through that law office, a place where you wouldn't expect light to be flowing through.
Not today, anyway.
Yeah. But I really felt it there, and like I said, it cut through my sleepiness, and so I highly recommend that. And then also I drove down the road to a place called New Salem, which was a little frontier village that has been rebuilt, and it was a place where Abraham Lincoln, when he was a young man, first was starting to make his way in the world. So I could feel Lincoln's vibration very strongly in these places, in his home in Springfield and so on. And it was a very, I could really feel that what Yogananda had said was true, that this was a high soul that had come to America for a particular purpose. You were talking about making a commitment before coming into a reincarnation to take on certain duties or, you know, have a life purpose. And for Lincoln, he definitely did that. And I could feel a real light coming through him, and that this, I could really feel that this was an advanced Himalayan yogi, as Yogananda said. And then the next day, I flew to Minnesota, and I drove up to a town called Little Falls, which is in central Minnesota. And this was where Charles Lindbergh had grown up as a young boy, called the Lindbergh Home. And so as soon as I started to, actually, right when I entered the grounds, coming through the gate of the Lindbergh house, my knees almost buckled.
Really?
Because it was the same feeling that I had felt the day before in Abraham Lincoln's sights, except for one thing.
Wow.
Lincoln was well known for being melancholy. He was sad. Some of his photographs show that sadness.
Yeah.
And who knows what karma he came into that lifetime to have that.
Yeah.
But it didn't diminish his light. To me, it was more like a spice that you put in a soup to bring out the flavor.
Yeah.
And a very specific lifetime, very beautiful lifetime, very inspiring lifetime.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. But then when I went to Lindbergh's, I felt the exact same vibration, but the sadness was gone. And that's something that's interesting when you look at the life of Lindbergh. He has so many similarities to Abraham Lincoln, but he didn't suffer from melancholy like he did. He didn't have that sadness that plagued Lincoln throughout his life. You can really just see how Abraham, and this is the way that I could understand it when I was meditating and feeling this beautiful inspiration in Lindbergh's home, was that through all the selfless actions that Abraham Lincoln had done in his life, he had freed himself of that sadness. And in the life of Lindbergh, you see that nothing really bothered. I mean, things did bother him, but nothing really kind of got in there and stuck in there. He had a certain inner freedom. He was able to enjoy life even at times when things were very hard for him.
You mentioned the connection between William Randolph Hearst and Lindbergh. What was their relationship?
Yes. You know, it's interesting because Hearst was very taken with Lindbergh after he made his famous flight. Actually, most of America was taken with Lindbergh, but Hearst in particular, most people who don't know, he started that great newspaper chain, and he was this great media mogul and so on. And there's been some question as to, you know, some of his activities, whether they were all on the up and up or so on. But anyway, he was a great man in his own way, in some ways at least. And he was just enthralled by Lindbergh. I think maybe it was something to do with Lindbergh's innocence, his inner purity. I mean, this is something that struck everybody after his flight, just what a pure soul he seemed to be and actually was. And he offered Lindbergh a few gifts, silver statues of, or creations that were the planet Earth and then I forget exactly what they were called, like terrestrial spheres and so on. And he gave these really beautiful works of art to Lindbergh, and Lindbergh, I think, put them in a museum. But he offered Lindbergh to create a movie about Lindbergh's flight and asked him if he would like to star in it. And Lindbergh said no. He thought about it overnight or for a few days, and he just felt he had read certain things about Hearst that just didn't feel quite right, and so he didn't want to make a commitment, but at the same time, he wanted to be his friend. And so Hearst gave him this gift of these two silver works of art. And the interesting thing is that Hearst was a huge Lincoln fan. He was the one who actually helped to make sure that New Salem was saved for posterity, that it wasn't divided up into condos or something, and helped to create that. So I saw this, too, in the life of Lindbergh, that a number of people who really loved Abraham Lincoln also helped Lindbergh during his life, including Hearst, Henry Ford, and Douglas MacArthur, General MacArthur.
Wow. Just out of curiosity, what was the lifespan of the two men? Was there any correlation there at all between Lincoln's lifetime and Lindbergh's?
You know, I think not really. Lindbergh lived nearly 20 years past Abraham Lincoln's life. Of course, Lincoln's life was snuffed out, abbreviated, you know, early.
Right.
And Lindbergh's wasn't. He died of, a form of cancer. And so he was able to enjoy his life. And when you think about it, what sort of karma would Abraham Lincoln have for having done so many wonderful things?
Yeah.
It makes sense that in his next life he would be able to enjoy a full lifetime.
Yeah.
He lived into his 70s and really was able to enjoy everything, many things, in fact, that Abraham Lincoln enjoyed and loved but wasn't able to do much about because he had this very impersonal lifetime. In fact, his life was practically lined up for him. At a very young age, he started to have dreams of ascending to a high place in life, in power, and then falling from that height in a bloody end. And so it was like from the very beginning, he had a sense of what his life is going to be like, and there's not a lot of leeway in there.
Yeah.
You pretty much have to do things that will be in conformity with that.
Yeah.
You get a little bit of time off here and there, but by and large, you're living a very strict and impersonal life.
Yes, it seems that Lincoln's life was possibly more scripted,
yes,
you know, and structured than Lindbergh's, because Lindbergh certainly had a lot more, seems like he had a lot more spontaneous fun.
Yes, Lindbergh had incredible freedom in his life. As soon as he made that flight across the Atlantic, the world was his oyster.
Yeah.
He had an open passport throughout the world. And the interesting thing is that Abraham Lincoln loved to travel.
Huh.
In fact, when he would go on the circuit court in Illinois, when the others would stop riding the circuit court and helping these people with their law cases in the small towns around the county and so on, Lincoln would continue to ride it, partially, I think, because he really enjoyed traveling. And this connects, too, with what Yogananda had said about both men, or the one spirit that was both men, having been a Himalayan yogi in a past life, because there is this tradition in India of Himalayan yogis traveling throughout the country and never stopping for long in any place, feeling like the whole world is their home.
Mm-hmm.
They're called the wandering sadhus. Mm-hmm. And Lincoln and Lindbergh really kind of epitomize that in their lives, Lincoln to a lesser degree. But Lindbergh, boy, he just traveled anywhere that his feet or a automobile or a motorcycle or a train or especially an airplane would take him.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the other connections that you found between the two men?
Yes, you know, they're really fascinating. As I mentioned, these connections, they cover every aspect of human life, from the physical to the mental, emotional, social and even spiritual. I'll just give you some of the more interesting ones.
Oh, good.
Yes. Both men lost sons while they were centered in the public eye.
Huh.
Lincoln lost his son Willie of typhoid when he was president, and of course Charles Lindbergh, the famous kidnapping.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so his son died during the kidnapping attempt.
Oh, that's right. That was more than just a mystery movie.
Yes, yes.
It really happened.
It really happened. Yeah, that's true. And both men, like I said, Lincoln, you think Bush is scrutinized.
No.
Lincoln, during the Civil War, everybody was watching every move he made, and had his son die then. And for Lindbergh, too, he was more famous than the president during, you know, after he made his flight. This was just a few years after. So. Both men ended up viewing their sons' remains after their sons had been dead for weeks.
Oh, my.
Yeah, Lincoln's son who died, his name was Willie, he was Lincoln's favorite son. And, you know, they hadn't moved very far forward on embalming in those days, but he insisted, in spite of that, that he asked the men to disinter his son's body so that he can look at his face one more time. He did this several times after he'd been dead for a while.
Really?
Yeah, so you can see the love that was there and the power of the desire to see him no matter what the condition of his
form. Wow.
And again, you see a certain detachment there that would go in line with the Himalayan yogi.
Then
Charles Lindbergh, when they finally found his son, I mentioned that his son was killed during the kidnapping attempt. Most historians agree that it was a failed kidnapping, that it was an accident that happened during the kidnapping attempt.
Huh.
And so when they found the son's body, it had been laying out in nature for a number of weeks. And others had already identified the boy, and it was not necessary for Lindbergh to do so, but he insisted on seeing his son's remains, even though, again, you know, you can imagine what the condition was, which is really quite extraordinary. Lindbergh's daughter, Reeve, wrote about this in her book, Under a Wing, and just pointed it out as an extraordinary example of parenthood, that he insisted on doing that. And both men also fell in love with young women named Anne.
Huh.
Lincoln fell in love with a young woman named Anne Rutledge, according to the Lincoln legend.
Huh.
And Lindbergh, of course, Anne Morrow, ended up becoming his wife. Both got engaged to those young women when he was 26 and she was 22.
Huh.
You see these sort of things just sort of splicing through, just sort of threading together, you know, just these karmic threads just passing through so many parts of their lives. I mentioned nearly 500 connections. It really takes you through all their lives and shows the many, many similarities between them. Both had light blue eyes set deep in the sockets. Both men tended to study people as if from a distance. And both men spoke with the dead, which is interesting.
Oh, really?
Yes. After Willie had died, Lincoln had his son Willie came to him in a dream, and he said to one of the men in his cabinet, "You know, it's strange. I knew that he was dead, but it seemed like he was more alive than when he was alive."
Really?
And it was a very moving experience, and he wondered for a time if he was starting to go off the deep end because he had had this experience.
Uh-huh.
And then Lindbergh had a similar experience with his dad, who he was very close to. After he passed away, he wrote in his final autobiography that the two of them, he would come in dreams, and they would talk as if he had never gone anywhere and just, you know, just touch base that way. And, you know, in the teachings of yoga, there are these certain powers, abilities that come to yogis as they grow spiritually. Now, these are universal truths. These are universal spiritual truths. So it's not limited to the practice of yoga, but the yoga teachings give a very clear and concise description of what happens as you grow spiritually. And for anybody who has perfected the ability of introspection, of self-study, it's said that they are given information comes from them to them from higher spheres.
Uh-huh.
And this happened in the lives of both Lincoln and Lindbergh. These sort of dreams, these sort of even waking dreams or almost visions would come to both of them. So that was quite interesting.
Huh.
Both men were truthful to such an extent that they were shocked when people lied to them. Now, you know, what's Lincoln's nickname? Honest Abe, right?
That's right. That's
well, the reason they called him that was because he was truthful to such a degree that most people wouldn't go that far.
Yeah.
As he put it, you know, if you say the truth, but you don't, when you're saying it, you don't know if it's true or not, then it's as good as lying.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's really such a strict view on truth. And when Stephen Douglas made a commitment with Lincoln to not do any campaigning for a period of time, not to make any speeches, Lincoln was really shocked when Douglas did so anyway. And he said he never quite trusted Douglas after that.
Huh.
And Lindbergh, after his flight, he was given these promises by so many newsmen that they would write this and that. And then when he would read the stories, he would see that they'd made up all this stuff. And he was really shocked. He really just shocked him that somebody would say they would do something and then not do it. It was just beyond his comprehension, at least at that point in his life.
So, uh-huh.
Again, there's a similarity between the two men in consciousness.
Yeah, yeah. Was there any speculation that they married the same woman, that she might have also been somebody that reincarnated or incarnated for both men?
That's an interesting question. I was just starting to work on that idea when a friend of mine who had also known about Yogananda's statement and he said something that really made me look in another direction. When you actually look at the lives and the personalities of Mary Todd Lincoln and Anne Morrow Lindbergh,
uh-huh.
you see two women who are not really very similar in their personalities.
Okay.
To give one example, Mary Todd used to just tell people that she hardly knew various in-depth secrets about her life and about things that were going on with her. And Anne Morrow was just very quiet and didn't, kept her cards close to her chest more.
Uh-huh.
She was more like her husband that way. In fact, Lincoln and Lindbergh were both that way. When you look again, and my friend mentioned this idea to me, when we look again, I had mentioned earlier that both men had fallen in love with a young woman named Anne at about the same age. And these two young women, actually, their personalities are very similar. So we have a possibility here, at least, and maybe much more than that, of these two Annes having been the same soul.
Yeah.
And this is a story of unrequited love. This is a story of star-crossed lovers. Abraham Lincoln, as his legend tells, and as his law partner asserted, and others who knew him, fell in love when he was a young man with this young lady named Anne Rutledge, who lived in the little frontier town of New Salem.
Uh-huh.
And they fell in love, and they were engaged to be married, and then she contracted a disease, and she died.
Oh, my.
And according to Herndon, Lincoln's law partner, this was the start of his melancholy.
Oh.
That he had met his real soulmate and had lost her, basically.
Huh.
And that it was a real pain for him. And, you wonder, you know, some of us have had these experiences where we have this close connection with someone, but things don't work out for one reason or another. You move away before it can be consummated, or, you know, will anything ever happen? But here's an example of star-crossed lovers coming together, that in the halls of time, that throughout eternity, there will be time for you and he or she to come together if you really have that desire and that need to connect together that way.
Right.
And we see that the personalities of Anne Rutledge, well, we don't have a wealth of information about Anne Rutledge, but what we do have is choice. What we do have really correlates very closely to Anne Morrow Lindbergh. So.
Huh. Interesting. Why do you think that, from what you can tell, this might be from the yogic view, why do you think that Lincoln would reincarnate as Lindbergh? What do you think his purpose was in doing that?
Yes, well, as I mentioned before, and everybody knows this, that Abraham Lincoln died, his life was just cut off.
Yeah.
He had finished his great work. He had held the country together during the Civil War. He had freed the slaves. He had signed the Emancipation Proclamation. He had done many, many other good things that just really helped this country tremendously. And he's considered the greatest American. Of course, Homer Simpson has been giving him a run for his money. This is these popular polls and so on. But consider the greatest American, consider the greatest president. Many people consider him one of the greatest people who've ever been on the world, planet. And so, but he, right at the end of the great work, his life was taken away from him. He was taken away from the world. And now, if you understand the law of karma is such that whatever you put out has to come back to you in equal measure, whether positive or negative. It's just like pushing a pendulum out and then having it swing back. You know, it just, again, there's this latent force there that has to come back. And for somebody who did so much good in the world, they had to come back to this world to reap the benefits of that lifetime.
Right.
And now you look at, then we look at the life of Charles Lindbergh, who at a young age did something really amazing and heroic, but people went crazy over him. I mean, from what he had done, you can imagine that they would be impressed and, you know, be inspired to some degree, but the reaction was so much far beyond what he had done. It wasn't like 5 and 5 equaling 10. It was more like 5 and 5 equaling 10 million. People just showered love and adoration on him. They wrote poems to him. They named schools and streets after him, and they created little miniature works of art having to do with his flight, and the whole country just went crazy, not only here in America, but throughout the world. Anywhere that Lindbergh went, if he'd never gone there before, even like decades after his flight, they would, you know, put together a parade and have him come to a banquet and all this stuff, which he got really darn sick of after a while.
Yeah.
But everybody just showered love and adoration on him. He never had to worry about finances after that flight because everyone was offering him jobs and so on. And he could pick whatever career he wanted, which ended up being in aviation, which, you know, travel, again, as we said, was one of Lincoln's interests. He basically reaped the good karma that Abraham Lincoln had created. When Lincoln died, everyone just mourned for him.
Yeah.
30 million people either attended funerals or lined the railroad tracks of his funeral train as it traveled from Washington, D.C., up the eastern seaboard, and then westward into the Midwest, and eventually ending up in Springfield. 30 million people, and soldiers would shoot their guns up in the air, and people wept and laid flowers along the tracks and just showered love and appreciation for him, and they just mourned him because they realized it's like Carl Sandburg said, you don't realize the height of a tree until it's cut down. And that was his case for Lincoln. And then, you know, for Lindbergh, again, just to give you one example, he was in a victory parade in New York City. And he was going down Broadway, and there were the people there and the cheering and the confetti and just thousands and thousands of people lining the street. And they didn't only line that street, but they were lining also the side streets going branching off from Broadway.
Uh-huh.
And people were down like a block or two away, and they didn't even see Lindbergh. They just heard the noise that let them know that he was passing by there, crossing across the, you know, the side street that they were on. And some of those people were weeping. Now, this sort of emotional response, it doesn't make sense, because Charles Lindbergh wasn't the first person to fly the Atlantic. He was somewhere around the 5th or the 10th. There were these other people who had flown it in dirigibles and other, sort of flying machines. About a week or so after his flight, two men flew even farther than he had, and they landed in Germany somewhere, and they were ignored.
Huh.
You know, you just see the karma. Why is one person just able to achieve so much great success, and others who are very similar to him not able to do so?
Yeah.
You know, why do people react emotionally to one person but not another who is, again, very similar?
And
we see that in the case of Lindbergh. As I say, historians scratch their heads. I've read so many biographies where you could just see the confusion on the part of the biographer. Why did people react that way?
Uh-huh.
But, you know, while I was working on my book and reading about Lindbergh's flight, I felt this pull. This is, you know, 70-plus years later.
Wow.
I felt this pull of love for him.
Huh.
You know, it was like you couldn't hear about him and read about him, or many, you know, even now, to some degree, some people will still feel this and not feel this attraction to him, this feeling of love for him.
Uh-huh.
And people just showered love on him. He was able to, he had these parades in Washington, D.C. The president took him in like he was a member of his family and
wow.
took him to church and drove in the president's car. He would go places and they would put the American flag in front of him and they would play the Star Spangled Banner. And, you know, you wonder, was this a president in a past life? Well, it certainly seems possible, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. He lived long enough to watch the Apollo 11 astronauts land on the moon, didn't he?
Yes, actually. He enjoyed that. In fact, he sponsored those missions, and he attended a number of Apollo spacecraft launches. He loved the cutting edge of transportation. And this is another Lincoln connection. Lindbergh actually helped to make that happen also in other ways, because he met Robert Goddard when he was at the beginning of his experiments with rockets, and he helped to find funding for Goddard's experiments. So he was a friend of Goddard's and very interested in his work. And so whatever was the cutting edge of transportation, Lindbergh was very interested in and usually put his seal of approval on it. He didn't for the SST because he started to worry more about the environment.
Mm-hmm.
But and for most cutting edge transportation, well, he was really the symbol of cutting edge transportation,
uh-huh.
making a scheduled flight across the Atlantic for the first time, arriving basically right on time.
Wow.
And, you know, and it was just amazing. He sort of inaugurated modern flights, you know, international flights that way. But Abraham Lincoln was also interested in cutting edge transportation. When he was a lawyer, he used to argue cases for the steamships when they were the cutting edge of transportation. And then the railways, to the railroads, he started to argue cases for the railroads against steamship interests. And when he was president, even in the middle of the Civil War, when it was really a question of whether this country would survive for much longer, he signed the bill for the Transcontinental Railroad, because cutting-edge transportation is one of his hobbies.
Wow. You mentioned Yogananda a few times, and I have a couple questions about that, too.
Yes.
Are there any links between Lindbergh, Lincoln, and the practice of yoga?
Yes, absolutely. One of the more interesting connections between Lincoln and yoga has to do with a practice called pranayama. Pranayama, now again, these are the deeper teachings of yoga. We're not talking here about just the yoga postures and exercises, but the subtler spiritual teachings that underlie the practice of yoga. And one of those teachings, as I mentioned, is called pranayama, which means energy control. And Himalayan yogis who have mastered, or any yogi or anybody who's growing spiritually who has mastered this, can often do amazing things with their bodies. There are records of Himalayan yogis able to lift heavy objects like boulders and carry them and so on. And the interesting thing about Abraham Lincoln was he pretty much did the same thing when he was a young man.
Huh.
He lifted a 600-pound chicken coop and carried it. He was able to lift a 1,000-pound box of rocks with just a few ropes. He was able to carry that. And there was one trick that he used to do. He did it when he was a young man, and he also did it when he was president. He would take an axe. Now, in the 1800s, you know, metallurgy wasn't quite as advanced then as it is now. So an axe head in those days is often just, you know, solid iron. You know, it was really much heavier usually than the axes that you have nowadays.
Uh-huh.
And he would take an axe with a very long handle with a heavy axe head on the end of it, and he would hold it down at his side with one arm, holding the very end of the handle, and he would slowly raise his arm up until it was parallel to the ground. From his, it would be a straight line from his shoulder to the end of the axe head. Now, if you've never done this with a really heavy axe head on the end, you have no idea how hard that is to do. But he had such control over the energy in his body that he can do it. And his friends, who some of them were much more burly than Lincoln, Lincoln was tall and thin. He and Lindbergh had very similar bodies, tall and thin, but also they had great strength. He was able to do it, but their friends, who were more like Schwarzenegger types, they weren't able to manage it.
Huh.
So that was a connection between Lincoln and yoga. And then for Lindbergh and yoga, I'd actually like to mention something that most people don't know. Most of us know that Charles Lindbergh in 1927 flew the Atlantic, but most of us aren't aware of the metaphysical experiences, the spiritual experiences, these experiences that he had during that flight.
Oh, yes. What happened?
Yes. So these are very much connected with the path of yoga. Before he made that flight, Charles Lindbergh was hardly able to sleep the night before. A, he was very excited. And then B, when he had finally gotten to sleep, somebody knocked on the door and woke him up. And so he had pretty much zero sleep the night before the flight. And the flight itself was 33 and a half hours.
Wow.
So we're talking about 60 hours or so without any sleep. And so he started that flight in the morning, and he was going across the Atlantic, about halfway across the Atlantic, and going about 100 miles an hour or so in the air there. And if you've never experienced this before, I've tried staying up all night. And there's one point in the night where it's very hard to keep your eyes open.
Mm.
And Lindbergh was experiencing that. And this battle started to rage between his conscious mind and his subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
His subconscious was whispering to him, "Oh, you've got to sleep. You can't stay awake like this. You know? It's just humanly impossible. What are you trying to do? You're crazy. You know, you just have to sleep." And then the conscious mind was saying, "You're crazy.
Right.
If I close my eyes, I'm going to
crash.
Yeah, dive into the Atlantic, and nobody will ever hear from me again."
Really?
So this struggle was going on, and then as he wrote in his book, The Spirit of St. Louis, a third part of his mind came in and started to connect with him. And it said, you know, just relax. You're going to rest, but you're not going to fall asleep, and you won't die, and everything will be fine. And this third part of his mind was his superconscious, as the yogis would say.
Mm.
And in fact, the superconsciousness, Yogananda said, can be found at the horizon line between the conscious and the subconscious mind.
Mm.
So the tension between these two parts of his mind catapulted him into a superconscious state. And he accepted this unlikely advice from this part of his mind because he was so tired and just surrendered. And suddenly he found himself in a very different situation. He was feeling very charged and spiritually and energized while he was very relaxed. But his body was still flying the plane on the autopilot. It was doing it beyond his conscious control.
Huh.
And it actually took a lot of, you had to do a lot of things to keep that airplane in the sky. I mean, it was top heavy with gasoline. There was gasoline even in the wing structure. It was a very dangerous thing to fly, but he was doing it super consciously he wasn't doing it consciously. While he was doing this, suddenly he found that he was able to see all around the cockpit at once, as if, he said, the back of his head was one big eye.
Wow.
And this is something that the yogis experience. It's a rare experience that comes sometimes in deep meditation that the yogis call spherical vision.
Huh.
And Yogananda actually mentioned it in his book, The Autobiography of a Yogi, that he had that experience a number of times. Anyway, while he was experiencing that, he noticed that the back of the cockpit was starting to get a little crowded, that these spirits started to appear there, and they would come forward one by one and talk to him. And he felt so comforted being in their presence, and they felt so familiar to him, that he wrote in his Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Spirit of St. Louis, "I wondered if I had known them in a past life."
Huh.
And we can wonder, knowing what Yogananda had said, whether these were old Himalayan yogi friends of his.
Sure.
You know, who had come, who had shown up at this very important moment in his life to offer support and guidance and spiritual help and so on when he most needed it.
Wow.
And so after they were there for a while, and he said he never could remember what they said.
I was going to ask you if you if you wrote about it, but I guess not.
Yeah, he actually, this experience was, it made such an impact on Lindbergh that he wrote about it three times in his final autobiography, his Autobiography of Values. So you could see how he really molded over during his lifetime, because this happened some almost 50 years before he wrote that book. But anyway, so after they had disappeared, these spirits, he had another experience. His spirit separated, his astral form separated from his physical body and passed forward through the nose of his airplane. And as he wrote, it mixed with the wash of his propeller. And then he astral projected, and his body was flying out in space to one side of the spirit of St. Louis. So you have this picture there of Lindbergh flying and the Spirit of St. Louis flying right next to him. And at this point, Lucky Lindy was flying two planes at once.
Wow.
The Spirit of St. Louis and the astral plane.
Wow.
And after a time, he came back into his body and he felt really refreshed and recharged, as if he'd had a great amount of sleep.
Huh.
And there's one other interesting thing having to do with all these experiences. And that is the fact that when he finally made landfall, he was shocked. He looked at a map and he looked at what was below him, and he was almost exactly on course. Now, this is especially shocking because several times he flew through fog, several times his actual compass didn't work.
Uh-huh.
And the likelihood or the odds against him being exactly on course after everything he went through and flying the plane when he wasn't even aware of what he was doing is so astronomical. It's just amazing. So you could see a really strong blessing coming in Lindbergh's life.
Yeah. Were there any similar accounts of Lincoln having had mystical experiences as well?
You know, he had various dreams about the future. We mentioned those dreams he had as a young boy.
Uh-huh.
He also had other dreams. There was one dream he had that came just a short time before he was killed. He dreamt that he was walking through the White House, he said, and there was nobody there. He heard the sounds of people, but he couldn't see anybody. And eventually he made his way in. He heard the sound of weeping that drew him forward, and he made his way into the East Room, which is a very large room in the White House, a reception room.
Uh-huh.
And he saw a body laid out there on a casket and for a funeral, and then he did see people there, and they were all weeping, and he said to somebody nearby, who is dead in the White House? And the man answered him and said, the president. He's been killed by an assassin.
Huh.
And then the sound of weeping just really loudly hit his ears in his sleep and woke him up, and it really made him think this dream. But he had these sort of intimations of the future at times. He said sometimes when an important event was happening in his life, or say an important event was happening in the Civil War, for instance, he would have this recurring dream of a ship moving quickly across the water, and each time that happened, everything would work out really well in that situation,
mm-hmm.
and sort of clear sailing sort of image. And so he had a number of mystical experiences. He actually invited, or his wife did more, mediums to the White House to do seances, especially after Willie died. Mary Todd Lincoln especially was wanting to connect with their little boy, and Lincoln was interested in that.
Uh-huh.
He would study what they did and try to see if they were fake or if they were real, and if they were real, he was often very impressed. And if they were fake, he would just find it very interesting to figure out how they did what they did.
Uh-huh.
And Lindbergh did the same thing. There was a man whose name was Romano, who was like a put himself out as a sort of a mystic, a magician sort of person. And he did something with Lindbergh's wife where he was able to do, the only explanation that Lindbergh could see was that he, thought projection, you know, that that he was able to read his wife's mind. And
huh.
He was really impressed by that. But he was fascinated by those sort of things as well.
Huh. Interesting. Do you feel that your book helps to provide evidence that there might be, that reincarnation is something that is a reality on the spiritual plane?
Yes. I think it gives very strong evidence that way. Now, I also believe that it isn't really possible to get absolutely conclusive evidence on the physical plane of a spiritual reality. We're talking about here of things that transcend the physical, life after death, reincarnation. You can find signs of these things, but I think as far as finding categorical, final proof, I think you couldn't find it in the physical world, because the physical world is, the spiritual world works through the physical, but it isn't defined by it. But in spite of that, I think my book really provides really strong evidence. Here was a statement made by a great master of yoga. Somebody like, say the Dalai Lama or somebody, if they were to say that somebody had reincarnated as somebody else, and you look into it very seriously, and I discovered so many points of corroboration. I didn't put everything I discovered in the book. And here was nearly 500 between Lincoln and Lindbergh and all those hundreds between them and yoga. And it really, I think it presents very, very strong evidence that life after death exists and that reincarnation also exists.
It's very, very compelling.
Yes.
What do the yogis say? How do they say that the law of karma works? I mean, is it, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but I thought maybe you could elaborate a little bit on that.
Yes, certainly. I think most people misunderstand what karma means. I think many people think it means punishment.
Right.
Oftentimes you hear this on reality shows. Oh, so-and-so is really going to get their karma,
Right.
People who say that don't realize that just by saying that you create karma, it just... everything that we do, karma literally means action.
Okay.
And it's the spiritual counterpoint to the Newton's third law of motion, or that says that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And this is a law in the universe. The universe is based on duality. And like we said, you push a pendulum out one way, and it comes back. But there's no desire to punish involved in it. It's an impersonal law of the universe, an impersonal teaching law. It's like the same law that happens when you put your hand on a burning stove and you get burned and you pull your hand away. There was no desire in the laws of physics or the laws of nature to punish you for doing that, but it's there to teach you, because if you left your hand there, you would destroy your hand. Eventually you would have no hand anymore, but because of the pain you realize, okay, I shouldn't do that. And it's the same thing with karma. We do something, if you go up to somebody and hit them, and then, within a certain period of time, somebody comes up and hits you, eventually you learn to stop hitting people, and it's more intricate than that, and sometimes it takes time for these things to come through, so it's not always really clear exactly where the karma is coming from. Sometimes it takes lifetimes for one particular important piece of karma to come around, but whenever it does come around, it teaches us. And as we grow spiritually, these things tend to turn around more quickly. The sort of instant karma that John Lennon sang about happens more often when you start to grow spiritually, because the ego isn't in the way as much, trying to keep pushing that pendulum out farther, instead of letting it come back so that we can learn from the results of our actions.
Do you feel that these are special times that we're going through right now, that there's a reason why this information is coming to light?
Yes. I had an interesting experience. I don't think I've told and mentioned this on radio before. I went to a psychic right near the early times of working on this book. I worked 8 years on it. And,
wow.
I was just sort of interested to hear what she might say. She was recommended by someone. And so when I came into where she was doing her readings, she was apparently running late, so she came up to me and she just told me that and asked me if it'd be okay for, to wait a little longer, which is, of course, fine. And when she was looking at me, it was strange because she looked at me and then she looked over my shoulder and she smiled. And I sort of found that strange. And then when I got the reading with her, I was talking about various things happening in my life, and she was interested in giving feedback, but I had the sense of impatience in her. And then I mentioned I was working on this book about Abraham Lincoln and Lindbergh, and she immediately just, this big smile, nodding her head, and she said, I saw Lincoln in your aura. And she said, in fact, I wondered if you might have been Lincoln or something, and I pointed out that my life you know, goes at the same time to a certain degree with the life of Lindbergh, so that wouldn't be true.
Right.
But she said, you know, this is really important, and I'm going to record this. She said she doesn't usually record her readings, but she wanted to record this. And she said this was a very important book that was coming out, that it's a message that people need to hear about reincarnation, that it will really teach many, many people what reincarnation is about.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's not so much to do with me personally,
mm-hmm.
that it's something important, that it's a message that's coming out. And I could see the case for that, because here are two historic figures.
Yeah.
Here we have these very spiritual truths coming out in their lives, and it's something I think that as time goes on, more and more people will be interested in.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that this is a field that's opening wide up right now. And,
yes.
You know, people are really craving to find out more about how our, you know, how all of this works from the other side.
Yes, and, yes. And the thing about this book, too, it's not about Lincoln and Lindbergh. It's about how these laws work in our lives. Because if these laws work at all, they work universally.
Yes.
There's no two...
Right.
You know, there's no double standard there in the universe. It'll work for people who are famous and people who are not so famous equally.
Right,
and
right.
People have told me when they've read my book, and I've been very happy to hear about this, that while reading it, they've learned about how reincarnation and karma really work in their lives. Because each of the... I tell a story, say, about Abraham Lincoln, and then I tell a story about Lindbergh. And you see the connection between the two men, and then you read another couple little stories, and now they connect, and over again, hundreds and hundreds of these. And as time goes on, you start to see, oh, now I understand how these things are working in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And this
mm-hmm.
is the benefit of this book. It's not just a history lesson.
Mm-hmm.
It's about our history.
Absolutely. And it's well written, and the stories are interesting in it as well.
Yes.
So it's a beautiful book, and, you know, I highly recommend that people read it, because, you know, anything that we can do to learn more about our spiritual side, I think, is a big plus.
Yes, yes, and also so many people spend so much time and energy to learn about their childhood, because they realize that what happened in their childhood, it affects them, and it helps to mold who they become later in life.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's true for one childhood, how much more true is it for hundreds or thousands of childhoods, and
yeah.
not just childhood, but a whole lifetime, you know?
Absolutely.
And so there are times when it's helpful to know a little bit, at least, about our past lives, so that we can heal from it and move forward.
Absolutely. Richard, how can people find your website? Tell us how to reach you and where your book is available.
Yes, yes, absolutely. It's my website can be reached by typing in LincolnReincarnation.com. So that's one word, LincolnReincarnation.com. And actually, on my website, I have a special offer for my book.
Oh, good.
If you purchase it on my site, Lance, then there's actually you get these bonus gifts that are worth about $130 or so, and it includes a past life reading through numerology and
wow.
a past life consultation with myself and
wow.
a number of other wonderful, wonderful bonus gifts. So I encourage listeners, if you're interested in reincarnation and past lives, to go check out LincolnReincarnation.com.
Absolutely. Well, Richard, thank you so much for being a guest tonight. You were marvelous.
Oh, thank you, Lance.
And I love your book, and I wish you the best. That hour just flew by. It was fascinating.
Yeah, it really just did, didn't it? And thank you so much, Lance, for having me on your show.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks a million. And thanks to the audience for listening. Good night, everybody.